Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. As always, a couple of reminders before we get started here. First off, my co-host and I tend to be dirty, foul-mouthed sailors on the air.
Sorry,
if you can call this the air. It's not live, but we don't bleep it, so put your headphones on.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we tend to be more on the blasphemous side of the conservative to liberal line. So, you know, if you're offended by that,
fair warning.
Well, then God bless you. But maybe find a different podcast. And we're Catholic, and you don't have to be, because we try and cast a wide net here on Church Drunk. We're excited that you're here. I am Guess, here with my co-host Dizzy. Diz, what are you drinking?
Well, today I am sipping a rather involved cocktail that I would not have probably attempted, but coming up later on, we'll have Mrs. Guess,
yeah,
who is infinitely more patient and has concocted this dragon's breath cocktail, a little foreshadowing there.
Bum, bum, bum.
So it's gin. I'm not even telling you amounts. Just pour it. Pour these things into a shaker.
Pour it in a glass and stick it in your face.
Gin, lemon juice, a simple syrup or something sweet, whatever. Orange juice, Aperol or something fizzy, fresh basil leaves, and then shake that all up, muddle it, if you will.
Yeah.
And then pour it into a glass with ice,
mm-hmm,
and then pour red wine on top so it's like floating on the ice.
Uh-huh.
And then you take a halved hollowed out orange, pour 151 into it because you're 18 and have that at your house, and then light it on fire, and it will be like a dragon's breath coming
like
out the top of
dragon
your cup.
Dragon breath shooting
guys,
out your cup.
Full disclosure, we did not have access to 151 because we've already established we're snobby drinkers.
Yes.
And we did, though, still have the leftover chartreuse, which you may remember from a past episode.
Yeah.
That is 110
proof. 110
proof. So we lit that
next
shit on fire.
Thing.
And guess what? We had blue dragon's breath.
Yeah.
I think you should try it. And now we're sipping the remnants, and they are delicious.
It's
here,
a good time.
Here.
It's a
welcome
pretty drink.
To Church Drunk.
Welcome to Church Drunk. We are drinking Dragon's Breath because this is a special episode of Church Drunk. I mean, they're all special in their own way. How can you pick your favorite child?
I think this is actually the second time we've mentioned dragons, though, because I think we gave St. George a shout-out.
I think we have. Yeah, I think we have given St. George a shout-out.
But we're not talking about him.
So it is, we are Game of Thrones fans.
Mm-hmm,
We've read the books. Dizzy is in process of watching all of the episodes.
I like to have a long string ahead of me. Not so patient.
Yeah. I've watched them. We will not be spoiling anything, just FYI. But the season finale is coming up this week, so we thought it would be a good time to dig into the fictional religious world of Westeros, along with some of our other favorites.
Yeah,
so
things from screenwriters and authors and just like world builders who have bothered to incorporate ritual and religion into their fantasy worlds.
It's something that tends to, I think, you know, like creative people kind of see themselves on a journey, and that tends to mesh well with like religious themes.
Yeah.
And so you end up with, you know, like some of the obvious comparisons where, like, you know, the Chronicles of Narnia are very obviously like an allegory sort of for the Christian faith and, you know, Aslan and Jesus and all of the parallels there and stuff. But it, you know, like there's some that are much more lighthearted and tongue in cheek and some that are much more involved and convoluted. So it's kind of a fun topic.
And I think, like, people who like fantasy or world building kind of like certain things about religion, even if they wouldn't say that they're religious. Like, like rituals and symbols and, like, ancient traditions. Like, that's the kind of the same vein as any kind of world building or fantasy. Like, there's that appeal and that rich, detailed
layers
of
story.
It's
a cultural hallmark, right? Like, I mean, religion is something that defines cultures throughout history. So it's kind of funny because it creeps in not only to, you know, the sort of fantasy fiction world building stuff, but also, like, I mean, one of my favorite fictional religious holidays is Festivus, right, from Seinfeld, where, like, people actually celebrate Festivus now. Like, people actually hang out around the Festivus pole and have, like, feats of strength and airing of grievances as, like, a thing.
And the religious scholar would say, look at the yearning people have,
right,
you know, for religious ritual.
Yeah,
that is your God-shaped hole warped into some.
And if you can't connect with, like, you know, the religion of your childhood,
you're gonna make it up.
Then you find something else that is like a touchstone for you. But yeah, I mean, like, so there's things like that. I've noticed, you're not a gamer, But no. I wouldn't call myself a gamer because I would put myself in a category where I simply don't belong because true gamers are much more dedicated than I am. But, you know, I'll play a video game from time to time. And there certainly are a lot of religious themes in video games for one reason or another. That's something like when we were playing 8-bit Mario back in the day, like we never would have guessed. But, you know, some of the ones like Assassin's Creed and The Witcher, they have like really involved stories. Assassin's Creed kind of rooted in pseudo history, you know, like the Templars and
Creeds all these kinds of names.
Right, exactly. But The Witcher was one where I was kind of surprised there was actually a lot of religious themes. Not to nerd out too hard, but like as a character, you visit sacred places outside of churches to like gain strength, and you can meditate to like regain your strength and stuff like that. So there's a lot of religious themes woven into that and a lot of other videos. There's a whole video game about Diablo, like going to hell to fight the devil and stuff like that, that comes out of like Catholic mythology. Okay. So, you know, like there's all kinds of, interesting things going on that level.
Yeah. I think, you know, people like religion. I mean, I guess we could even just broaden it that way. Like people want to have that. And so you see it in different ways. Or they're not like religion,
they're
but
intrigued
like
by it, right?
Humanity though likes rituals, likes meaning behind things, like in the broadest sense.
Yeah.
But I think the other, you know, Narnia is like a supposition of Lewis, like he wanted his whole separate world.
Right.
And then of course there's like Tolkien, who doesn't really build a whole separate religion. He's more allegorical, I really feel, than Lewis is.
Yeah.
But you know, the one that we haven't talked about yet, which is the kind of the big one,
the biggie,
I think, especially in Western culture, has got to be the Jedi and the Force from especially the first Star Wars trilogy.
Right.
And in my poking around the not even dark halls of the internet, I found out today that there are actual like real people who are Jedis. Have you heard of this?
Well, I know
they're like an established religion in like the UK.
I knew that
they can wear the little hoods and cloaks. Like those hoods and cloaks. like brown. No.
Like the UK hoods and cloaks.
Brown proper ones, like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Saint Obi-Wan Kenobi's brown robes, which are reminiscent of the Franciscans.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Well,
what's your confirmation name?
For an extra 5 minutes and $5, I almost became a Jedi online. When I became a Universal Life Church minister.
This is why we're kind of heretical.
Yeah. you know, like, it's the thing that you do when
I did not realize that was an option.
Yeah, so
I kind of wish you had.
You go online to get your Universal Life Church thing so that you can marry people, you know, like as the celebrant.
Heathens and fake religious ceremonies, sure.
a blessed union of two souls that simply don't want to get married in a church or by religious standards.
I mean, it doesn't count, but
it counts in the Universal Life Church. But the next step after you say yes, I will abide by the Universal Life Church standards of all life is universal. Check. Then you have the option of getting your Jedi certificate.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. And where is it? I would like to see it. How could you pass
up
on that?
Oh, I didn't. I passed it up. Well, I feel like you gotta earn it, right? Like, a Jedi has to be able to make a lightsaber.
They're not real.
Whoa, now who's heretical?
Okay, true. You know, I will not let anybody watch Spaceballs in my house, so that was pretty heretical.
It's so funny.
No, it's not. Anyway, we're getting off topic.
I'm surrounded by assholes.
You're just now realizing this. Where's Mrs. Gashel back here?
I know.
She doesn't like any of it. Okay, but really though, Jedi's
very much rooted in like true deep mythology, and a sense of religious tradition.
And yeah, and I mean just mythology. Like George Lucas is the only one who like did all the steps of the hero's journey in his stories.
Yeah,
but Joseph there's Campbell a lot of like classic religious things we have, like, you know, ancient traditions handed down. We have orders. We have shrines.
Yes.
The Force is kind of like the way. I think I see a lot of Taoism in the Force and in the Jedi religion, if you could call it that. Not the fake one in real life, but the real one in fake life of the movies.
Well, and I thought that the newest one, Rogue One, actually did a nice job of kind of highlighting the Jedi tradition as a faith-based like religion.
Right, they have tenets.
Yes, whereas in the original trilogy, you kind of get the sense that it's a tradition, right? There's kind of like a warrior tradition to it, but then you tap into something deeper and there's the Force, then the dark side. But like it was already lost by the time we see that. And then there was that other trilogy that we don't talk about where it would have been like an active religion, I guess, supposedly. I just did air quotes. You can't see that on a podcast, but
there's a lot of air quotes right now. Yeah.
But I thought that with Rogue One, with the character who really was a man of faith, and he put his faith in the Force, and he had like this mantra, I am one with the Force, and the Force is with me. You got the real sense that they were building a religion.
Yeah, or at least a way. You know? I mean, I think that is the description of it in there. But also then later in the ones that will not be spoke of, you know, we see haircuts and young fellows and a veritable Sanhedrin almost. So,
yeah, practically.
You know, they're really just pulling from all kinds of religion and people really like it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that is
something deeper.
Part of the reason that Star Wars has such a following is because it introduces that element of the Force in a way that is inviting and not like... Yeah. Like, blocked off, you know,
right.
It is something that's very exclusive and you have to like really practice at it to gain full access, but it's also pervasive. It's everywhere. Yeah. And like, you wish someone, may the Force be with you. And it like means something in that
and
tradition.
And also with you.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
With your spirit.
And with your spirit.
No. Yeah. I mean, and there's the light side and the dark side. There's this idea of temptation.
Right.
Also not in Rogue One. But in The Force Awakens, we have like this total like gross, weird shrine scene with, you know, Kylo Ren and Darth Vader's like helmet. And it's very religious.
Yes.
Like it feels like prayer and ritual. And we have cremations, which like harken back to the pagan days.
Yeah.
And, you know, this whole human story.
There's almost like sacramental components to
definitely.
It.
Definitely.
You know,
lots
I mean, like,
of that.
Like there are these.
The lightsabers themselves are almost
there's these tangible symbols that the Force, you know, is with you, that you have tapped into it or that you remember others who have had a special role or a special kind of abiding within the Force. And that's like, you know, I mean, there's a lot of church themes that are woven into that.
The Force is strong in this one is like the spirit is moving in that one.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, all right. So definitely that's pervasive.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Pulling from all kinds of stuff.
Totally.
And then the more recently, we've got Game of Thrones fever taken over.
It's
a
the
lot
next
of the
big
world.
Thing, right?
It's the next big thing. Lots of people like it.
Yeah.
And religion is like an overt thing in Westeros. And
it
many
is. It's
religions.
It's very in your face over the course of the show and the books. And in fact, I think that when I read the books, it was very much prevalent like as I was going through it because it's like, as you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of pages.
Right.
And really, it's all kind of a comparison and a contrast of the different religious traditions that have kind of guided Westeros and taken over at times, you know, and there's a sense of like forced conversion going on at the time that the story is taking place. But then before that, there's this, you know, many-faced God and the Seven and all that kind of stuff. And before that, you had the Children of the Forest and sort of the pagan tradition.
The so first there's, peoples and all.
Yeah, this sense of movement and a change and a flow of religious tradition.
Well, and I think, you know, George R. R. Martin is much more...
That was good restraint.
I was really holding back. Hey, guys, side note, if you haven't watched the South Park episode about George R. R. Martin, you should. Butters is really excellent in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't like him because he won't finish his goddamn books.
Finish the books.
So whatever. But anyway, George R. R. Martin is... very critical of religion, and that comes through in the books. Whereas the religious force in the Star Wars is kind of a more hopeful view of
it.
Right. So, you know, all these problems with religion in Westeros, you know, one being replaced by the other, and like you said, forced conversion and religion making people do gross or bad things.
Right. But I also like that the religious traditions, you know, you're right. Like, there's kind of an ickiness to all of them, except for sort of the first, the Children of the Forest and the First Men that have this pagan tradition that's very connected with the world that kind of has them more in tune with nature, maybe more willing to listen to what is really important that's going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, like... Most of the followers of the Lord of Light, they seem like really out of whack. Like 90% of the time, right? Yes. And just for the record, that would be us, followers of the one God, the Lord of Light, right?
I mean, I don't want that to be us. Okay, so when you're saying this, like the native peoples, you know, and they have old ways, it parallels our modern world too, where totally. Those people don't do so well in society, right. you might say. Right, they get run over or like left out in the literal freezing cold.
Yes.
And also, you know, Game of Thrones has a lot of medieval culture stuff coming in. And I think the religious part reflects that too.
Yeah.
You know, religion was presumed that, you know, you would like Tywin Lannister, like quote unquote, believes in the gods he's supposed to. He doesn't have any heart for it. It's like expected that you have some sort of faith.
Yeah. But I think that like for, you know, 90% of the time, the followers of the Lord of Light seem really icky and gross and weird. And there's demons and things like that that are going on and they're burning people and it's bad, 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 bad. Yeah. But 10% of the time.
And you're supposed to think it's good.
Right. Well, I mean, they think it's good. Right. They think they're like, doing the right thing. Right.
It's creepy.
And 10% of the time, though, I'm like, wait, no. But like some of those are like really cool characters that are trying to do the right thing that have badass flaming swords. And I kind of want to like root for them. Yeah. And yet they're part of this tradition that
and
they
can heal people. Maybe from that's projecting bad injuries.
And I'm angsty about it. But, you know, like,
you know, I don't want it to be true. Yeah. But you're right. Like if we were to suppose that we were in Westeros, we'd probably be red witches and warlocks.
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you've got, you know, like the prevalent religion at the time that the story is starting, right? Like the Lord of Light is kind of the up and coming one, but the prevalent one is this, you know, many faced God and the seven and things like that, where it's like there is a multifaceted God that they worship.
Yeah. So that one I feel like is kind of pulling from, if we're like trying to identify like where might inspiration for this have come from, you know, is reminiscent of, you know, Hinduism, maybe like many gods are representing different things.
Right.
And even within that, you know, there's one God that sort of encompasses them all. Right.
Yeah.
But still they have their unique roles and personalities.
Yeah. You've got,
so you see that
the mother and the warrior, and then you've got the stranger who kind of is like that heart of mystery. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's times where I looked at that one and I'm like, you know, like I know that one is supposed to make me feel icky at times during the books and the show as well, in part because you know that it has squashed that the Children of the Forest and the pagan tradition and things like that. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm like, well, there's that. I love that mystical component. I love the way that it's woven into some of the storylines. It's some of my favorite stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of fun to hear like other myths and weird stories other than like the Hebrew scriptures that we're believing, you know?
Totally.
So, you know, it's storytelling once again. And
it is. I think, you know, like, I mean, I guess my approach to it has been, you know, some of it I like root for, some of it I don't, some of it I like, some of it I don't. But, you know, like, I think I get a sense as we talk about it that, like, I've kind of picked through and found my favorite parts and been like, oh, I could take a little bit of that and I could take a little bit of that. And I mean,
well, and that's what the authors are doing.
Yeah.
You know, they're inspired from somewhere. So.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the way that I've pieced together my own personal faith life. And if it takes a fictional religion to show me the way, then God damn it, so be it.
Which God?
I'm not going to comment on that part.
All right. Well, there's lots and lots and many more that we haven't even talked about, you know, and especially in literature and books, there's more and more religions. So they make up different ways to see the world, I guess, and to process.
Totally. If you guys have favorites, we know that there's so many out there. We're not like Trekkies, but I know that there's a lot of interesting traditions going on with some of those cultures that are profiled there, you know, and you visit a distant planet and they are worshiping something or someone or whatever. If you guys got favorites, feel free to let us know and hit us up.
Or if you want to write your own, we'd love to feature that sometime.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we may be posting on the blog a couple of you know, creative expressions of our own faux religions or fictional religions. And in order to give us a little bit of inspiration coming up in just a moment, we will be inviting our very first ever guest onto the program.
Mrs. Guess.
Mrs. Guess is going to be joining us. unless she's come up with another name that she wants to be called.
Or an excuse to avoid our hijinks.
So in our next segment, we will be having Mrs. Guest come on, and we're going to play a little bit of fictional religion Mad Libs.
I mean, it sounds as good as any way to make a new religion, let's be honest.
That's coming up right after these messages from not our sponsors.
Yeah, we'll just play something else.
And welcome back to Church Drunk. You rejoin us, actually, after that brief interlude. During quite a pivotal moment in Church Drunk history, actually, we are joined for the first time ever by a guest here on Church Drunk. Mrs. Guest, thanks so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
You don't have to speak in that voice.
Mrs. Guest is actually a Mrs.
Yeah.
Do I have to talk like this if
you talk like that?
This is my radio voice.
Oh, wow.
Quite sexy, really.
We should start over. Tell us a couple things about yourself. What have you learned from Church Drunk?
Oh,
my gosh.
What have
you learned from your wise, wonderful husband? Great choice in a mate, by the way.
Awesome interviewer.
That's me.
I know.
Interviewer supreme.
Mm, bias much, but...
Humble husband extraordinaire.
Okay, yeah. All right.
My learnings from Church Drunk so far. Always have a drink in hand.
Oh, we like that. Good.
Yeah, yes, it doesn't have to be good. You just have to have one.
I mean, drop the mic. Our work here is done.
Here.
That's it. That's my takeaways.
Well, you were the mixologist today, actually.
Yeah,
I gave you credit earlier that you concocted that very long drink that I would not have
I was inspired by Dragon's fire breath. And ice.
Wow. Way to speak to the talking points. Well done.
So we're really happy that you're here to help us play a very serious game of ours. We're writing some new creeds for some new religions, and you're like a fount of wisdom. So
Wait, now you just said yours is a creed. Mine's just like a story. It's like a description.
Mine's not a story, but it's like a statement of beliefs, kind of. It's like a summary of a religion.
Okay.
Is yours more of like a genesis, like an origin story?
Yeah, we'll call it that. Sure.
Guests really like stories.
Totally.
We'll just see.
We'll see what we get.
Variety is the spice of life. Yes.
So the way this works is Dizzy and I have prepared some fictional religion Mad Libs of our own creation.
True.
So just reaching deep into our brain space and seeing what comes out. And
maybe not that deep.
We are going to feel like that's a commentary on more than just Mad Libs.
What have you learned from Church Drunk?
Maybe not that deep. We're gonna alternate asking Mrs. Guess for filling in the blanks in our Mad Libs, and then we're going to read them off. So stay with us. We'll have 20 things that need to be spoken, and then we'll have stories
rapid
to tell.
Fire, though.
All right.
I'm ready.
So first thing that comes into your brain, okay?
Oh, man. Okay.
All right.
My apologies, listeners.
A noun, please.
Glass.
Okay.
I need a place. Can be real or imaginary.
Kazakhstan.
A verb.
Drink.
I need a body. Actually, I need two body parts. Different ones. They don't have to be complementary.
I need one later, too.
Ooh.
Oh, it's an anatomy lesson, folks. Elbow. Crotch.
Our two favorite body parts. Can I have a location?
Oh, a location. Jericho.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A noun.
Keyboard.
Adjective.
Light.
A plant.
A Venus flytrap.
Ooh.
An action verb.
Karate chop.
Whoa.
Let's see. An animal.
Oh my god. Oh,
a marten.
Ooh, very nice.
Nice pelt.
Yeah.
A body part.
Oh man. Your pinky toe.
Oh, okay.
An article of clothing.
Socks. I feel like I'm concentrating way too hard on this.
It's tough.
A belief or tenet. A value.
A value.
Sure.
Let's see. A value.
Like your favorite one. Just kidding.
Any value. Favorite value.
Favorite value.
Kind of fucked up Mad Libs.
Destruction.
Destruction. Okay, destruction. Good.
A
good.
Mythical creature.
A dragon.
Okie doke.
Nice. An adjective.
Cheery.
A number.
473.
A place or state of being.
Like meditative? In meditation?
No, like a place.
Like a physical place.
Vacuum place.
Interpretation. Wrong.
I said it wrong. It's my fault.
A place. Like a location kind of place?
Sure.
Or like the bathroom?
I don't care. I should have just said a place. Any place.
A hallway.
Sure.
A city. Sure. See? More specific. That's me.
I want it open-ended.
Again, fictional or real?
Salt Lake City.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And last for me, a verb.
Cherish.
Oh, I must have counted wrong. I have two more. I need a food.
Oh, gosh.
Escargot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And an adjective.
Ooh. Elongated.
Oh, criminy. Okay. So, give me one moment to flesh things out here.
Yeah. I'm not sure you guys gotta... I'm not sure what picture of myself I'm painting for your dear listeners.
Yeah, well, we're not professional Mad Lib writers, so yeah. We just have to make
I
sure just,
I feel like I was not demonstrating a consistent picture of my parts of speech skills.
Okay. So, are we ready?
Yes. And I will read mine first because I feel that you had better topics and we'll end relatively strong, whatever that
shifting
means.
Shifting on the fly.
Here.
Elbows and crotches.
Well, I thought you were going to go first for asking questions. All right. So.
Take it away, Diz.
All right. This religion is based on glasses. The worst sin is drinking.
So obviously.
I already hate this religion.
Yeah. Stupid.
The ancestors came from Jericho. And the faith is very lightly held.
I like that part.
Their worship centers on karate chopping.
Nice.
They use their pinky toes to proclaim destruction.
Okay, yes. I'm getting back on board.
Someday when they die, they will be cheery in hallways forever. As long as they cherish faithfully in this life.
Lovely.
There's some lovely things about
that. They're kind of bipolar.
Yeah.
It got kind of sappy at the end. But that's all right.
You know what? That's what religion's for.
Having drinking.
Placating you so you're not...
There's, like, only one thing that could get me back on board after they, like, don't like drinking, and it might be karate chopping. Like,
I want to see pinky toe destruction.
Yeah, right? I mean, I feel like there was a strong stretch there.
Is that not part of karate, is pinky toe destruction?
We wouldn't.
I don't know. You're barking up the wrong tree there.
This was a show about, you know, beliefs and religions and practices and...
Yeah.
No?
No.
Mostly libations.
Yeah,
mostly
libations. I'm a bar black belt. here we go. Now remember, this is your creation.
No, I do not claim ownership for the record.
In the far off land of Kazakhstan, the local indigenous tribes, yeah, that's right, we're already offensive. The local indigenous tribes honor the god of 1,000 elbows and the goddess of 1,000 crotches. There are
she's
no...
She's a good one.
she's like everybody's favorite.
She's sounding better and better.
There are no formal weekly services. Instead, the faithful are encouraged to offer a gift of keyboards whenever they pass by a Venus flytrap. Oftentimes... It makes sense for the goddess of 1,000 crotches that the Venus flytrap, actually.
Now you'll never see those the same
one
again.
One must honor the flytrap! Oftentimes, worshippers do not even stop. They simply throw their keyboards without stopping as they ride by on their trusty martens. Now, for those of you who don't know, martens are basically like overgrown squirrels or tiny little badgers. So to see the Kazakhstanis riding by on their badgers with a spare keyboard would be quite a sight.
Ancient Kazakhstanis, much smaller.
Much smaller.
Oh, I was thinking maybe the Martins were bigger.
Gosh, we are so offensive.
Wow. All right.
Both. Maybe just not in touch with our history.
The priests and priestesses of the Church of the God of 1,000 Elbows and the Goddess of 1,000 Crotches are known for their elaborate socks. They live in small huts next to the Venus flytraps, and every day they stand outside at noon and read loudly from the Book of Dragons.
Yes.
Every year, under the 473rd full moon of the lunar calendar, faithful worshipers gather in the sacred city of Salt Lake City to dance and sing and consume massive quantities of hallucinogenic escargot. The god of a thousand elbows and the goddess of a thousand crotches are honored with many readings from the Book of Dragons, and everyone feels quite elongated.
I feel like I tied those together very nicely for you.
Almost positive that elongated is like a made-up word. No, I guess elongated. I would just
it's elongated. A real word.
Yeah,
it's just like an awkward one.
Yeah, yeah.
In almost all situations,
except that one, it's perfect.
Oh sure.
So for, the French would be I'm pretty excited about the these hallucinogenic escargot.
Time for us to check our lunar calendar, because on the next 473rd full moon, we need to go to Salt Lake City on pilgrimage.
I think that was what we had on Monday, right? That was...
No. What we had on Monday was clouds.
Mm.
I think we'll have to just make sure we pack our Venus flytraps, which we'll never see the same.
And the Book of Dragons,
obviously. And the Book of Dragons, which I think needs to happen also.
Well, church drunk.
That'll be my next project.
Yeah.
We're still here.
So that was our religious Mad Libs. We may be posting those on the blog later on so that everybody can read and enjoy and perhaps add your own.
Yeah.
So feel free to hit us up with a tweet at ChurchDrunkPod.
You can email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Tell us about your favorite religions. Tell us about any ideas that are floating through your head. And follow us on the blog, churchdrunk.com, and we'll catch you next time on our podcast next week. So, Mrs. Guess.
Take us out.
I believe you have the honor.
Do I?
Yeah.
Of talking about what Church Drunk is?
Yes. Church Drunk. It's the thing that you said you were going to say.
then you changed.
No, we had Church Drunk. Wait for it.
Did you write it down? I don't remember
pause,
anything.
Pause. This is hold. Not NPR.
Don't even. A fictional world where the official religion is beveragism.
Beverage.
That's right. Wait, I'll say it again. Beveragism.
Beveragism. You need to enunciate.
Beveragism.
Elongated beveragism. Good night, everybody.
Peace out.